Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy B. Wilson.
We talked about the Bradley Martin Ball this week.
Mm-hmm.
I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, there's part of me that would love to go to an event like this. It sounds amazing. And I also recognize that it sounds wasteful as hell. And like,
yeah.
And the whole idea of like, no, this is benevolent. It's good for people is such a mixed bag and kind of short-sighted.
Last summer, I was invited to an event that was like a garden tour in Boston that I didn't realize until I was there was an event for donors, which I am one of. But I very quickly realized not of the same caliber as some of the other people there.
Right. Those are the people whose names are on the buildings.
Yeah. And like everyone was nice. Nobody seems awful in a like really overt way. But like I did kind of overhear this conversation about like whether Doha is the best airport to fly through, as though just taking a flight to the United States to somewhere that you might need to connect through Doha.
Right.
Was like a routine experience. And I right. was just like, this level of opulence, I feel like would be 10 jillion times more opulent than the garden tour for donors I went on.
Yeah.
And I think I would mostly feel very uncomfortable.
Well, that's why you would not be part of the 400.
Yeah. I
would. Because that was kind of part of the criteria, right? Was that, according to Ward McAllister, if you seemed like you would be uncomfortable at an event, you would not make the list. If you seemed like you would be comfortable at the event, but you might make other people uncomfortable at the event, you would not make the list.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had to be wealthy and chill in those circumstances
mm-hmm.
to be part of the magic list.
Yeah.
That list, the 400, is based on his theory that there were about 400 people, give or take, in New York
mm-hmm.
that were really, like, the right people.
That's come up.
Gross.
Yeah. I don't remember where, but, like...
Yeah, it's popped up on the show
it's
before.
It's popped up on the show before, and when I first heard it, I was like, are you serious? This was a real thing? Yes, it was a real thing.
I mean, this is part of why I would like to talk about Ward McAllister, because he is a weird case of a human who just decided they were the boss of that. Like, I am the boss of who is and who isn't in New York.
Yeah. I'm the boss of what society is.
Right.
And like the high society.
And like people were like, all right, I guess you are. I mean, he like aligned himself with Mrs. Astor and they were BFFs for a while. They had a big falling out towards the end of his life. But like, and he had died 2 years, I think, before this ball happened.
Uh-huh.
So he was out of the picture to give his opinion on it. But like, just that whole concept of like, I have only done a little bit of research into his life, but it seems like he only did like 2 years of actual work, where he was like a lawyer for a couple years and then was like, I'm just going to boss people around about whether or not they're cool. And I'm like, you're like a professional mean girl. What is this? How do you make that your job description? I don't understand.
You made a formal mean girl hierarchy for New York.
Yeah, essentially, like New York was his slam book. I'm so fascinated by that whole thing. As much as like, I will say, right, I am loving the Gilded Age. Like I said, I blazed through the whole thing. But it's also one of those things where I'm like, I hate all these people. I hate this hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like, even the good ones are like... just like the idea of clinging to these weird ideas of who is and isn't important based on whether or not someone else is willing to go to their house. I'm like, this is nonsense. I would be a nightmare in that kingdom. I would be... Yeah.
I also just felt like the whole argument of like, we're going to have a gigantic party to give work to the people that work in these industries. It was like a very trickle-down economics justification for having this party.
Yes, 100%.
And I was like, yeah, I was annoyed by the concept from the beginning.
Of course. So here's an odd thing that makes research not difficult, but it becomes a head scratcher.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you see Bradley Martin, which his name was Bradley Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But you will see the names Bradley Martin with a hyphen between them.
Yeah, I saw it hyphenated a lot.
And I don't know what that is. I saw one book that said that Cornelia hyphenated her last name as Bradley Martin, but I didn't see anything to back that up.
Hmm.
So I'm not sure if that was like an offhanded quip by the author or if she actually did.
Mm-hmm.
Some papers had it with the hyphen, some did not. It leads you to the false thought that there are two people named Mr. Bradley and Mr. Martin who are paying for this whole thing.
That's what I thought.
That's what I thought when I first encountered this years ago. And then I was like, wait, no, it's just a guy named Bradley Martin. Okay.
Even when I started reading your outline, I somehow like just glazed past the fact that his first name was Bradley. And so we were three or four paragraphs in and I was like, wait, we've been talking about Martin. Who's Bradley though? It's the same guy.
The calls are coming from inside the house.
I'm like, were you just confused about like the sort of AP style-esque rule about how compound modifiers coming before get hyphenated? Because we don't do that with people's proper names.
No. And I'm not sure what the scoop is there, to be honest. I also thought I almost put it in the thing, but I didn't really ever find anything definitive. This idea of like these all night parties that were very popular.
Yeah.
My understanding. And again, I read this somewhere online and I'm not sure where. And I didn't ever find like a true historical reason.
Uh-huh.
Was just to basically go like, we don't have to get up and go to work. We can party until 6 a.m. and then go home and sleep.
I haven't looked into this at all. But I do know that, like, all the balls that happen in Jane Austen novels often started very late at night and would really dance through the night. And I don't think I had really thought about, like, a why that worked that way. But I kind of wonder if the timing of this ball was a pattern, patterned after the way that it worked in...
Well, this was not an outlier in New York at the time.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't express it very well, but what I was trying to say is like these kinds of events, if they were just basically following what was established as the pattern in like Britain, in terms of how society functions operated and when they started and when they ended.
Right. But why did those do that? That's what I'm saying. Like going all the way back.
Yeah.
Is it just because people did not have to get up and go to a 9-to-5-er?
Yeah.
I love that idea. It's kind of my personal hours if I'm left to my own devices and don't have to function in society. So I'm down with this plan.
Not me.
The idea of like a 12:30 to 5 a.m. breakfast service sounds amazing, or supper service. those two. We mentioned the two different line items for supper and buffet supper.
Uh-huh.
And one with the cheaper of the two, which was I think the buffet supper, was like lighter fare. It was like light sandwiches you could kind of grab and go versus sitting at one of the actual tables and having people wait on you.
Sure.
All of this sounds amazing. I'm in for it.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
All 12 episodes of The Passage are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
There is a very funny thing that came up as the papers were covering everything in the weeks leading up to it.
Okay.
And there was one rumor that started, and the florists of the city were like, shut up, you guys. You don't know what you're talking about. This isn't real. This is not really a problem. Which is that the rumor had started that someone or someone's going to the ball had read about tulip mania and were like, we need all of the tulips.
I do love this detail.
It is. It's fun because they're like, France love tulips. We love that. We need all the tulips. And one of the florists going, that's not really a problem. We're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a whole rose problem going on, but tulips are not an issue. And also, France wasn't really in on that whole thing the way, like,
Holland.
Germany and all.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I don't know where you're getting your information, but it's not legit. And I just sort of loved this idea of this poor beleaguered florist who was like, I'm not taking any more orders and you don't know what you're talking about. Can you please stop asking me questions so I can finish my work? It made me chuckle a little bit.
Yeah. We already talked about how on the nose I thought all of the Marie Antoinette costumes were. And you all had already put that in the outline, which I knew, but I wanted to say it anyway, because I just was like, yes. Yes, everyone dressed like Marie Antoinette.
Of course they did. Listen, I get it. Who doesn't love those outfits? I love them. In terms of like the expected hubbub and potential riot, there was, I read in one account, but it was so sort of flimsy and not substantiated that there was one person arrested outside who was a black man who is allegedly named George Walker, who just sounded like he was like, get out of my way. Like, this is, you're blocking the street. And that he shoved somebody, but like, there's nothing, even the way the paper reported it is like, we heard that this happened, but there was no, like, they didn't have anyone from the police to corroborate that. They didn't have anything other than a guy said. So I don't know if anything like that happened at all.
Yeah.
I'm sure if anything did, nobody wanted it to be known.
Sure.
There are pictures, and the photographs are cool, except some of them are like, yikes, appropriation, yikes.
Oh, sure.
So if you go looking for pictures from this ball, just be ready. some of these costumes look incredible, but they are people doing things like play acting Native Americans and like, in gorgeous costumes that probably don't know anything about that culture and are just like, what, there was like a dude, a banker who dressed as a Native American and shaved his head and looks incredible in the picture. I will say it's a, and it's also just a gorgeous photograph in terms of like artistic composition, but like, it's a yikes. It's a yikes on bikes. there was so much money in that room. It's wild to me.
Me too.
It's just wild. You know, there's rich and then there's like redonkadoodle rich. And this drove right up to the line of good taste and then it popped a wheelie and went over it. It's just like went beyond.
Right.
Which again, there's part of me that's like, okay, get in the time machine because I just want to be there and see it.
Yeah.
Because I do love a party and I do love beautiful clothes.
Uh-huh.
I just don't want to be part of the whole justification that like, no, we're helping people by having this,
right,
having so much fun. Yikes. You can't see me kind of wincing, but yeah, I really, really like that rabbi's take of like, I get it. I understand it. But like, you could do better stuff with your money that would actually help people. We also didn't mention it, right? This was after like a stock market crash had happened in what, like 1893? Mm-hmm. And like New York just had not recovered financially, which is why so many people were really struggling. But again, you can't, that one night is not going to fix stuff. It's like great for a couple weeks. And then all those people will go back to struggling because they probably use that money to get caught up on all the stuff they were behind on.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Yeah.
I do sort of crack up at the fact that after this, the Bradley Martins were like, everyone's mean to us now. We're out.
We're going to go away. Take our money somewhere else.
And they did. Live presumably a great and fun life in London.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing. Must be nice, I guess. Yeah. Anyway. I'm tickled by the whole weirdness of it. It's just so goofy.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens on the Gilded Age. Maybe they'll get right up to that. And that'll be the finale of the whole series. I don't know. I know we have a season 3 coming, but I don't know where that's going.
Right.
It's so good, though. Oh, it's really good. That show is satisfying in a way that I think you would enjoy.
Yeah, I think I've had intentions to watch it, and there's just like a finite amount of time to do things in.
Yeah, it's there are certainly sad things that happen on it, but overall, like, things tend to end in upbeat places.
Okay.
You know, in a way that's not too fairy tale-y, although there's a thing that happens at the end of season 2 where I'm like, that is convenient, and it is, but you're kind of happy about it.
All right.
anyway, this is yet another show that I picked up on a flight and then came home and became obsessed with.
I was just thinking I'm supposed to have a flight soon and maybe I will preload some of that on my iPad.
Well, if you're flying Delta, it's in your in-flight. So
I am not, because it was not an option.
Oh, foosball. Well, I don't know. I don't know about other airlines. If you live in Atlanta, you're kind of Delta or bus. That's not true, but for me it is.
Yeah. I had one option and it wasn't Delta. Yeah.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways I imagine you haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Margaret Atwood, Questlove, Cate Blanchett, and Oscar Isaac. If that sounds like a varied group of people, it's because it is. I always wanted to make a show where one week we could sit with a politician like Beto O'Rourke, the next an author like Min Jin Lee, or TV titans like Bill Hader and Quinta Brunson. Basically, this is a podcast driven by curiosity and an abundance of research. Conversations where people actually start to sound like people. In recent weeks, I sat with Dan Levy, Ava DuVernay, Benny Safdie, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope to see you there.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
All 12 episodes of The Passage are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got to talk to Rachel Lance this week.
Yeah, you did.
I like her heap, so that made for a very fun time for me.
I do too.
This book is, some of it's real hard to read.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But like, some of the stuff those people went through is, I said it during the interview, it's harrowing. But it's like that stuff that makes my entire body kind of stiff and nervous.
Right. Like, right.
Because I enjoy comfort.
I have not read this book. I did read her other book, obviously, before doing the other interview with her about it. I didn't think I had the wherewithal to read the book at this time and was also going to be out of the office for a little bit. So Holly took the lead on this one.
Yeah, it actually worked out great because you were going to be gone during a week that worked best for the record on her end. And I was like, okay, we'll just do it this
way.
It
all aligns.
It all worked out just fine.
So I have listened to the interview, though, as a little behind the scenes of behind the scenes. Normally, when we record the behind the scenes part of our episodes, like we record the episode and immediately after, Holly and I record the behind the scenes.
Tracy, you're ruining the illusion that we meet on Friday and discuss
the
week.
Have a separate time. Yeah.
It just doesn't work. There's too much other stuff going
on. No. That's also why a lot of times if an episode comes out and we make a mistake in it, there's not going to be acknowledgement of that mistake on Friday because we don't know it happened yet.
Right.
So we'll get corrections sometimes where people will say, you could say this on your Friday episode. It's like the Friday episode is already done. But in this case, though, I had not read the book or heard the interview, and it was like, what are we going to talk about? So we delayed this discussion.
Yeah, this one is actually later in the game.
Yeah. As I was listening, something that I misunderstood, there's a conversation about how during the Blitz, there were people who sort of, in England, who sort of approached the Blitz the way some folks approached the the early COVID-19 pandemic when everything was shut down and people were like, there were people who were like, everything seems fine and weren't living in the same world of a pandemic that some of the others of us were living in. And I had interpreted that as being significant numbers of people in London who were somehow unaware of the Blitz happening. And it's possible. That's not what she was saying at all, first of all, to be clear. And it is certainly possible that there were folks in London who were, you know, somehow so wrapped up in their own stuff going on that they were not fully cognizant of everything that was happening. But no, she was talking about, when people were evacuating out to the country, folks in the country being like, but it seems fine here. Like,
Everything's okay. I mean, the war won't come to us. And it's like, it is at us. Like,
yeah. I was sort of imagining somebody standing in London next to a smoldering crater being like, I don't know what you're talking about, a Blitz thing.
I mean, listen, trauma denial is real.
That is true.
But I don't think large numbers of people in London were doing that. No, no. She was discussing how jolting that was for people when they moved out of the city.
Yeah.
And in particular, this team had moved their lab outside of the city.
Yeah.
As things were getting worse and worse. And they were just like strangers in a strange land where nobody was really at the level of of anxiety and stress that everyone in London was living at. And it was like,
people were just having life.
You're all very relaxed out here. What is this? I don't, but really serious stuff is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Of all the stories of scientists that Rachel shared with you in this interview, I was most delighted by the one who would just go up to people's houses and ask to look for salamanders.
Yeah.
I was 100% on board with this. I am friends with people who I am certain would do this. And like when we were in Texas to try to see the eclipse, which didn't fully go as planned, we went out every night looking for scorpions with a black light. So I was very much here for the salamander exploring. Maybe not so much for announcing that she was going to marry the professor, but very excited about the salamander excitement.
Yeah, all of the people, I mentioned it to Rachel, but all of the people in this book that were on this team were just almost criminally interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I am fascinated by them, and you see why it becomes clear that they all were the perfect assortment of folks to be working together because they were all a little bit oddball to varying degrees, which I say with love. That's not a disparaging or pejorative term at all. But like, I think they just had an innate understanding of the otherism that all of them were living in. So nobody felt like they were being judged by their peers in that group, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
And probably why they were all so good at just taking leaps of faith together.
Right.
Some of which were horrifying.
Right.
It is so fascinating to me, though. I really mention it, and I love Rachel's writing so much because one of the things that she does in her narrative style, and I didn't read all of In the Waves, her previous book, so tell me if this was the case there. For kind of, we had like the opposite scenario last time, because last time I was like, I can't read a book right now. Like, I have too many things going on. But she'll set things up where you're like, wait, did I just read that? And then she will explain it, which is kind of a great way to hook you. Like the story she talked about with the lit cigarette.
Yeah.
She doesn't explain why he does it initially. She's like, so of course his doctor handed him a lit cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa! Like I made a total Scooby-Doo noise while I was reading the book. And then she then goes on to explain why,
right,
as she did on the show. And I was like, oh, this is a smart way to structure these discussions because it does make your brain go, what?
Yeah.
Or make a Scooby-Doo noise.
It's true.
Love. I am also, my biggest fear in the like, what is the worst way to die universe? Drowning.
Okay.
And so all of these, all of these stories were very white knuckly for me.
Yeah.
You know, the stories of like the horrible things that had happened to precipitate the formation of this group.
Right.
I also just love that it's a group of geneticists that end up doing this work.
Yeah,
nothing to do with it.
I don't remember which specific thing I read. I hadn't realized that it was specifically geneticists, and I had this moment where I was like, "How did the geneticists get on this?" Because that seems like a different field to me. Like.
It is.
Yeah.
There's a really great quote, and I was going to ask Rachel about it, but we were running long, and so I didn't, because it really didn't add that much to the conversation. But there is a great quote in the book from one of the scientists where he's saying, like, look, at war, it doesn't really matter what your specialty is. What matters is, can you apply the scientific method to solving problems?
Right.
And it's like, oh, that does make a lot of sense. Like, these are all people that are used to figuring stuff out. So even though this may not be in their specificity wheelhouse, they do have a fundamental grasp of broad science, right? They understand how, like, things like air and water pressure work and all of that, even if it's not what they have been focusing on in their careers. And so then for them to just pivot from all of their biological specimens to then going, okay, so we have a water problem.
Right.
What's going on here? How can we fix this? And I'm like, oh, of course. It probably was kind of like, I mean, for me, and we've talked about the way I work on the show before and how it seems a little bit disjointed to some people.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this honestly is like, oh, I bet this made them better at both jobs.
Yeah.
Because I need to switch gears pretty frequently or I just sputter out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's necessarily any of their personality or work style types, but I do think like this gets into the discussion of like multitasking, which is fraught.
Right, right, right.
Which I'll talk about briefly if we want to. But I do think when you leave a thing that you've been puzzling over, focus on something completely different and then come back, often like a new perspective is revealed to you that mm-hmm. often can get you over that hump that you may have been at in terms of a roadblock. By the way, multitasking is, if you want to start an argument.
Yeah.
Tell people you multitask. Because the thing is, right, like there are studies that are like, no, if you're actually multitasking, you're doing not as good a job at everything, right?
Uh-huh.
You're kind of, but to me, it's not so much I'm doing multiple things at once. It's that I'm changing constantly.
Right.
It's not like I'm trying to write and read a book while I am also sewing. They're two different things
yes.
that I alternate. Because different parts of my brain get fired and then I can solve problems better.
I but. Also let them obviously I cannot speak knowledgeably on the entire field of neurology and
what
all of that.
You didn't get a quick degree while you were out.
I went and got a PhD while I was on vacation. No, I'm kidding. Don't yell at me if you actually got a PhD and it I know how much work that is. But like I feel like a lot of the studies that are on those type of things, so many of them happen like on college campuses, and a lot of the people being studied are like undergraduates getting extra credit. And if you have a cohort for your study, which is like a bunch of people with ADHD, you're probably going to have very different results in terms of what works for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
this has come up on the show before, completely unrelated to science, but just where we've talked about recognizing like people that ended up achieving big things late in their life, people didn't realize when they were young that like the standard method of education at the time was not going to work for them.
Right.
Because like, we hadn't really gotten into the level of educational research and study and how the brain functions at that point. So,
and I would say there's still a ton that we really don't know about how people
for
learn.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think that's, it's so individual from person to person. What works for you will not work for your, you know, closest friend, will not work for their sibling, will not work. Like,
yeah,
it's, I appreciate that there is a level of challenge at this point in any caring education system to try to address all of the disparate kind of optimal scenarios that would really, really help all of the people in their classes function at their best.
Right.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Educators, yeah. We love you. I'm sorry your job is so hard and not appreciated or paid enough for what you do. I will say if you are looking for a fun read, a good one.
Yeah.
It's doing very, very well. It's selling very
oh, good.
Well. It's on
good.
Lots of lists.
Good.
So I'm pleased. And I'm not surprised because it is quite compelling.
Yeah. I really enjoyed what's the name of the other one? Was it Into the
Waves
or Beneath the Waves? In the Waves.
In the Waves.
I'm going to have multiple incorrect prepositions at the beginning of it. I did like reading that book quite a lot.
Well, if you're looking for something to read and you're okay with hearing about people breaking their bones and other things while they pursue advancements in science, it's a great one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's worth it alone for all the quotes from those scientists because they are a pithy, interesting group. So highly recommend. If you have time off this weekend, it's a great time to read a book. if you are into reading books. If you don't have time off, maybe sneak a couple pages in. Again, if you're into reading books. If you're not into reading books or you don't have time off, do whatever is going to optimize that time for you and make you your happiest, if at all possible. We will be right back here tomorrow with a classic. And then on Monday, there'll be something brand new.
Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.